promised to be clear.
Serious problem indeed, but this is one thing. But second, technical difficulties are being experienced and corrected.
Okay, our next speaker is Brooke Erdogan from University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and he'll tell us about near-linear evolutions for 1D periodic NLS.
Nice. I thank the organizers for the invitation. So the title. This is a joint work with Vadim Zarnitsky. I will try to describe certain solutions of the 1D nonlinear Schrödinger and how they behave in time. And we are not discoverers of this solution, so first I should describe you where they come from. And they come from optical fiber communication systems. So the problem is you have optical fibers between the points 0 and t, and little t gives you the distance on the fibers. And at the point 0, you feed a optical wave, say phi, and this is parameterized by x, and at point t you just receive it. And ignoring all physical constants and loss terms and stuff like that, the evolution is given by nonlinear Schrödinger. With initial data phi. And this problem is on the real line, the model. So here Q is basically the envelope of optical wave. So if there are any experts, I apologize, this will be an oversimplified exposition of this phenomenon, since I don't know any better than that. But let's try to go over it. So what you want to send, obviously, is a stream of coded, binary coded data. So you have bits. For each one, you send your favorite bump. Or for each zero, you send nothing. Right? And then you hope to get at the end the same thing. Of course, this doesn't work. If you have linear Schrödinger, for example, the bump will disperse, will decay, and these things will start overlapping, and at the end, you'll get a big mess. And with the nonlinearity, there will be nonlinear interaction, so it will be even bigger mess. So what you may try to do is, for example, use Solitron solutions. Or you can use Solitron solutions after some scaling. And you may, in this case, you need to keep the bit length large so that various solitrons won't overlap too much, so that they won't lose their shape in the long run. And this is not what I am going to talk about. There is another so-called regime. They called it quasi-linear regime. In this case, what you do is you just don't care about whether or not various bumps overlap during the evolution. You just send, you work with following band, bumps. Let's fix the bit length to 2 pi. One over root epsilon is the minus x squared divided by epsilon squared. So these bumps do not behave like a soliton, because to behave like a soliton, soliton scales like L1. So to make it support epsilon small, it should grow like one over epsilon. These are smaller, and they require less. They are L2 scale, so L2 norm is one. So probably this is the reason they prefer this regime, and this is basically, as far as I know, never used. So the observation is the following. If you set this, if you use this, these bumps, then at time t, you get qt, and evolve it back in time into minus it Laplacian, and what it looks like is basically it is not disturbed, except some phase difference. So this L2 difference, of course, you have to look at the bit length. So let's say nth bit length. And you have supremum in the bit length. This difference goes to zero, as epsilon goes to zero. So the solution basically behaves like linear evolution, except this modulation. And here P, capital P, is a function, basically. P is a function of little p, where little p is the frequency of one. In an average coded data. So, to my mind, this is very interesting because, as I said, soon after you send the data, all of these bumps disperses and they start covering many bit lengths. And during the transmission, they interact nonlinearly, and their L2 norm is 1, it is large, so nonlinear interaction is large, but at the end, you just get an average effect for the nonlinearity. And you may say this is still a problem, because if you evolve this thing, if the evolution is linear, they will be still messed up. But they can apparently handle this, because by changing the fibers cross section, by playing with the cross section of the fibers, they can make dispersion positive or negative. So they can make D, for example, 1 half the time. Again, I am oversimplifying. Or minus 1 other half the time. Right? And at the end, in the first half, you will get e to minus it Laplacian. In the second half, you will get e to it plus Laplacian. And if you look at the evolution, bumps will be basically undisturbed. This won't change again. P is just a constant. It will be clear when I state the theorem. P is just a constant, average L2 norm, kind of. L2 norm squared, right? Alright, so this particular system is actually pretty well studied. They also consider the case when they mainly consider this dispersion changing periodically and the period becoming very small. And they call this dispersion managed photon, NLS. And dispersion managed NLS has better behaving photon solutions, which doesn't require that much L2 norm. And they are apparently very commonly used. So there are not many papers, math papers, describing this or explaining this situation. There are a couple papers in the physics literature. Zakharov and Monakov, 99. And Ablowitz Hiroka and Biondini, 01. And in both of these papers, they studied this dispersion managed photon as the this plus minus variation as the period goes to zero. You obtain an averaged equation, and the averaged equation has a weaker nonlinearity. Then you study the evolution of a single pulse. And there, nonlinear effects are not observed, so this P is actually zero in that case. It's more like a scattering result because the bump basically decays. And we want to explain what is the effect of this nonlinear interaction, so we consider the following case. Basically, let's make the periodicity 1. Let's put a bump to every bit length. So, all 1. Alright, let's consider this very special case. And this immediately leads to the periodic formulation. Q0 x is phi of x, and x is in the torus, assuming that bit length is 2 pi. So, what type of conditions we need for the initial data? If you look at this scheme, you work with these exponentials. So what is their Fourier transform look like, Fourier sequence? It's basically root epsilon, and between the points 1 over epsilon and minus 1 over epsilon. So, we prove the following. Consider nonlinear Schrödinger with periodic boundary conditions, and assume phi hat L infinity, little L infinity, is less than similar root epsilon. And you have to assume something more, because we need some integrability condition. You can just assume that phi is in L2 norm is 1, but we needed more, so we basically don't care much what the best condition you can put here. It's not clear to me at this point. So L1 norm is controlled. It's not small, but so these two conditions, essentially the best you can assume for phi hat, assuming that the L2 norm is like 1. So if these two things hold, then basically we have this. Let me write it in this form. Of course, it is same as nonlinear evolution minus e to the i t Laplacian. Let me stick to my this i t 4 p. Plus 4p phi 2 norm this to know. This is less than similar, Japanese T times epsilon to the 1 minus. For any power less than 1, we can put such an estimate. So after the time 1 over epsilon, basically the nonlinear evolution is essentially a linear evolution, but it's like scattering. The nonlinearity doesn't become negligible, its effect just becomes a rotation. And here, P is pi 2 norm squared divided by 2 pi. So the proof basically is very simple. So I will say, as you will see in a moment, it's not very complicated. We use Hamiltonian formalism and normal forms. So before that, I want to give a simple heuristic argument saying why such a thing should hold. But before that, let me mention a couple of results, general results about NLS that we need. So, Bourguin in 1993 proved L2 well positive, global well positive. And you can approximate your initial data with smoother solutions, and this is useful for us. And these type of norms, they are not very commonly used in NLS. People work with HS norms in general. And there are some results that, there are some previous results with these norms. So we have an unpublished work with Mike Christ, proving that the solution Q hat LP remains bounded. And recently, Chris worked with these norms and proved global well-positiveness in FLP space. But we don't need these results. They are not related with the proof. So let me try to convince you why this should be the evolution. You look at, let's say, UM with the Fourier sequence. SM. Right. You can immediately write the equation in the Fourier space. Derivative of UM is equal to M square UM for the Laplacian, and U cube comes as a convolution. Q cube. So you can just immediately say make a change of variable to kill the linear evolution. So let's say Vm is e to the I m squared t u m. Once you do that, you see V satisfies the following, is equal to minus 2 each of them will bring M1 square, M2 square, M3 square with bars, and you get this T end today. So, by looking at this, you can immediately say, so you can immediately say that, or argue that, the terms, oscillating terms, should have smaller contribution. They would be averaging out. So which terms are not oscillating? So they are called often resonant terms. Right? So the exponent should be 0, m square minus m1 square plus m2 square minus m3 square is 0. And we have this convolution condition on the indices. This immediately tells you very common things used in this business. This can hold if and only if these two sets are the same. So, this may be already clear why we get this factor P dash. So, if you look at the resonant terms, the sum for them is minus 2. M1 can be M2 or M1 can be M or vice versa, right? So, this brings you two possibilities. You have no oscillation. You have Vm, and you have a sum in M2, absolute value V square. Right? But we counted the terms with that all of them are equal. M1 is equal to M2 is equal to M3 is equal to M twice, so you subtract that. These are the resonant terms. So this is basically P. Since V L2 norm and U L2 norm are the same, right? And with our assumptions, this is basically assuming that it remains so. This is only O of epsilon. Right? So the contribution of the resonant terms basically satisfies the theorem. So this is the contribution of P and left hand side. You have on the right hand side, if you like, two plus non resonant terms. So this gives you the linear evolution, and this is the edge. One can try using basically Duhamel and integrate the right-hand side, and obviously try to integrate by parts. This gets pretty complicated, so that's why we used normal forms. Let me describe them a little bit. Hamiltonian formalism. This is a very commonly used thing. It's basically, I mean, if you ask me, it's a form of integration by parts. It's a way to estimate these non-resonant terms. So, some references I should give. I mean, these are the places that we learned the subject. I don't know, it's not complete in any sense. Kuksin has two books on the subject. I think the first one is useful, and Kuksin and Pochel has a on our papers 1895. And Bourguin used this in many papers in connection with NLS or KDV, and this 04 paper we found useful. So, but to do that, in general, you need, it helps to have H1 data, but of course our data is not H1, right? And you can try to work with this directly, but there is no need, since we already have global well-postnet result of Bourguin. So we basically modify the initial data by e to the minus delta n and put it in all HF spaces. The form of this thing is kind of important, because with this you can easily close the estimate because of this convolution structure. Other kernels do not, other modifiers don't work as well. So you basically write the Hamiltonian n squared un squared minus I, this is the linear term, and you have nonlinear part of the Hamiltonian. So let me call this lambda 2 following Cooksin and Pochel, and let me call this H4. And the H4 has obviously two pieces. If you look at this, H4 has a resonant piece and a non-resonant piece, depending on N1 square minus N2 square term. So resonant piece, lambda 2 plus resonant piece, it basically gives you the linear evolution. And to estimate the non-resonant piece, to get rid of the non-resonant piece, use a normal form transform. Let me briefly describe that. So if you have another Hamiltonian under certain conditions that I completely ignore, you have the time F map of F, and time 1 map, you can use it, time 1 map, for example, as a change of variable. So if you let U is equal to chi F1 V, you can write the new equation in V, and it will be, did I write the equation anywhere in the first place? No. So, I mean, with Hamiltonian, what is your equation? Derivative of UM is partial H partial UM bar, as usual. Right? So, in this case, V satisfies the following Hamiltonian equation with composition of the Hamiltonians. And the good thing about this is you have a Taylor expansion. You can write H compose chi F S expanded at the point S is equal to 0. So this is at S is equal to 0, you get H back. Derivative at S is equal to 0 is basically the bottom bracket. And you have higher order terms. And so on. There is a reminder term you need to deal with, obviously. You don't have a priori analysis or anything like that, but let's ignore them. So, Poisson bracket in this case is so what you do is H has, so this thing has lambda 2 plus H4R, which is good for you, and you have H4NH, which is very large, in the flow produces very large L2 norm. So you pick lambda 2 so that lambda 2 F commutator gives you minus H4NH. It kills the non-resonant terms. So it, as you may expect, F has this following form. The just like in integration by parts, you will get that thing, quadratic terms to the denominator. And this is easy to check, modulo constants or signs. And if you do that, basically, lambda 2 piece here will kill the non-resonant term. You will be left with H4NRF. And higher order commutators will kill also half of it. So you have the evolution, the Hamiltonian is lambda 2 F kills that, so you have H4NR, 1/2 H4NRF, and let me just ignore the higher order terms. So you need of course estimates for all these terms, but it turns out higher order terms will, they produce a small LP errors for any p in between 1 and infinity. Right? So, acceptable errors. Epsilon times the epsilon times our assumption. We started with, of course I erased it. We started with initial data, Fourier sequence in L1, and L1 norm less than epsilon minus 1/2. If you look at these guys, they will have epsilon times that. It will produce the epsilon error in the evolution. But the H4NR piece is better than H4, but it is still bad, so you need another normal form transform to kill the non-resonant terms here. Of course, in integration by parts pictures, you will have exponential with 6 squares, right? 6 quadratic terms, and the sum of 6 square terms will replace this. So, let me show you just a simple calculation. Calculations are very, elementary. Since you have L1 assumption, LP, L infinity assumption, once you decide that the theorem should look like that, all the calculations are easy. Let's look at F, for example. Let's look at the flow of F. and we need to see its the flow in LP. Right, so if you take derivative, either N4 will, N2 will be killed, so you have N1 minus 2 times N1 minus N2 plus N3 is equal to M, LP in M, and UN1, UN2, instead of N3, you can put M minus N1 plus N2. And if you do that in the denominator, the good thing about the four terms is it can be written as a product of 2 modulo signs, and you know, you will get such a term. Oh, actually N1 does not matter much, but N1 minus N. So you need to look at this LP norm, right? LP norm in M. But this is a very simple thing to do because this looks basically like a convolution, right? So this is one way of writing it, if you like, is you can just take this U L infinity norm out and then write the rest as a convolution with 1 over N. So it will be U convol 1 over N times U convol 1 over N. Nothing deep going on in LP norm. In L1 you can do slight variation, obviously. And so you can estimate this by U L infinity epsilon to the 1/2, or you can basically estimate this U L 2 P minus, since this is slightly, it misses to be in L1 slightly, so U L 2 P minus, and this gives you epsilon to the 1/2, epsilon to the, by basic interpolation, 1/2 minus 1 over 2 P minus. Oh, sorry, there is a square here, right? So there is a square, so 1 minus 1 over P minus. So it gives you epsilon better estimates. Epsilon 1 minus better estimates than what you started. So this means flow of F basically do not disturb our variable, so we make acceptable errors by using this transformation F, and you can estimate higher order commutators and error terms, and everything gives acceptable transformations, error bounds. So you can I'm not sure if one needs L1 and L infinity estimates. I'm not sure if I care, but it may be possible to prove similar thing by only LP, LP prime type estimates, or HS, H minus S type assumptions. But it may be interesting to see if the evolution remains linear after time 1 over epsilon. That we don't know. So that's all.
When you make a choice of F,
you still have
the Riemann term coupled with F by the first order.
What happens? I just forgot it, but it's okay. It's small, yes. Yes.
So it's in a two-dimensional space.
In two dimensions, I mean, that is related with cubic nonlinearity. Depending on which nonlinearity you will get, you will have different powers. I mean, you will have different numbers. But
what I meant by these terms are like, this M is like another method of
Yeah.
And then you don't have these like
No, you don't. I don't know. So it's something that I am thinking about, but I don't know the answer. It's much harder. This is very simple because of this. I mean, the piece that I showed is simple because of this structure. You lose this structure once you do the second normal form. It will have six terms, and it won't be. You cannot write it as a product. But dealing with that is not as hard. It's not as hard as the two-dimensional case. Yes. Yes, that's why you have this. Yeah.
Have you tried to use any of the Necker-Oshev stability stuff that's in the Borah-Bor paper? It seems like you might be able to make these stability times much longer than one over epsilon.
I haven't tried. Thank you for suggesting I may look into that.
Yeah, with respect to Akhil's question, the 2D case up here is very, very much related to the topic of my talk.
Other questions?
Right.
Thank you for your attention.